It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert. Rob Ferret is back next week. Coming up yesterday, 100 activists headed to the Capitol building to ask for parole reform in the state's prisons. We'll speak with a minister and former deputy district attorney about that. First, we're getting an updated set of manners for the 21st century. The days of Emily Post and stuffy etiquette might be over, but that doesn't give us a free pass to be rude to everybody either. These days, there are people constantly yelling into cell phones when maybe they should be paying attention to their coffee order, leaving their dog's calling card in your yard, and looking at their phones instead of at you over the dinner table. Why does it seem like our world is suddenly full of so many rude people? And what can we do to stop these people from being jerks when we see it? Amy Elkin is here to help us. She's the writer of The Advice Goddess, a science-based syndicated column that runs in about 100 newspapers across North America. She's also the author of Good Manners for Nice People. Amy, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much.
Well, you say we are more rude now than ever before.
Well, I say we're experiencing more rudeness because the truth is rudeness is the human condition. But the problem is we now live in societies too big for our brains.
And what does that mean?
Well, a British anthropologist named Robin Dunbar measured the human brain size, and he figured out that we have a capacity for about 150 relationships. And this made sense because we evolved in these very small bands where we knew everyone. And when you know everyone, they have to behave differently than if they're strangers. And now we live in these vast strangerhoods where we are around people much of the day, many of us, that we have never seen before and will never see again. And if they are jerks, they can do anything to you, and many of them do.
So they can just toss their garbage on your yard, or in your case, you thought you saw a guy peeing near your fence, and they'll never see you again, so maybe it's okay to be rude, is what our brains are thinking.
Well, you're basically no one and nothing to them, and that's how they treat you. And yes, so they feel that they can do this with impunity, whatever they want, basically. Be as rude as they want, act as entitled as they want, and nothing will happen to them. And I would like to change that, to bring back shame, basically.
What does shame do for us?
Well, we evolved to have a great concern for our reputation. And so even when we don't know people, if we make them feel as if everyone's looking at them, this enacts our evolved psychology where this would have been a problem. So I like to do something called web slapping with the egregiously rude. The people who aren't just, oh, I wasn't mindful, but the people who are tell you to, you know what, off, and they're going to keep their loud cell phone call going. So I like to videotape them and post it to the web. And even if they don't see it, other people who are terribly rude will see that and think, uh-oh, not I should be a better person, but I might get caught.
So you have to be pretty quick on the draw with your cell phone, but are you ever worried that someone's going to come after you when they see you filming them?
Well, I do it clandestinely when I do it, and I encourage that in other people. And also, I mean, you have to be a little bit prudent. If someone looks like they're a gang member and they're armed, maybe just let it go.
So what are some instances where you've done that? Can you give us an example of web slapping from your own life?
Sure. On my cute little street here in Venice, California, I'm a Midwesterner, but I moved here because there are palm trees and it's warm all the time. I'm from Michigan. But someone dumped all this trash, bags and boxes of trash, on my cute street. And they actually made the mistake of leaving their name on and in the trash. I went through it Nancy Drew style with rubber gloves, figured out who they were, demanded on Facebook that they remove their trash. And when they didn't, posted about it on my website, naming names. And then they still didn't come pick it up. And so they were actually, it was a famous foreign surgeon and his wife. And they had sent these curtains to somebody in a very ritzy neighborhood here. So I mailed a sampling of their trash to their friend in the $2.5 million house saying, could you please tell these people to come pick up their garbage?
Wow. And did it work?
Well, it worked in the sense that it showed other people that there are people who are watching, that you can't get away with it. So I don't know. These people, obviously, I messaged them and everything, and their friend knows and told them. But are they new people? Are they better people? Do they care about strangers? Or do they just think they're going to get away with it? I think the latter is probably true. But they might think twice just because somebody is there to catch them. And that's been an example for them.
Well, you're using technology to shame some people. Technology also, you say, is at the problem, at the root of some of our rudeness. Now, it doesn't necessarily cause the rudeness, but we're not always using our technology well. What are we up against when it comes to technology and rudeness?
Well, we got all this technology with no rule books. When the phone first came out, they actually published a book about how to use it. And we're in the Wild West here. And so what happens, one thing is that research shows that a one-sided conversation, so a cell phone conversation, commandeers the brain in a way a two-sided conversation, like two people talking in a coffee shop, does not. Because your brain tries to fill in the side of the conversation you can't hear. Now, people don't know that, but what it means effectively is that even having a conversation in a low tone on a cell phone in public, it basically gives all these people, other people around you, what I call neural itching. It's really annoying to people.
Right. And there's some comedy based on that I've heard of, where people will stand and answer the cell phone questions the other side of the conversation of people that are talking on their phones, just to illustrate a point.
Well, yes, I've done that. But the problem is that you can really annoy all the people who are already annoyed even more. You don't want to become part of the problem. And that's part of the problem with people in traffic. People want to videotape them. Well, you don't get to crash your car because some guy's a jerk, some other guy in another car. You have to behave as if the root of manners is empathy, which it is, that we have to think about, gee, how will that affect other people? How might it affect other people?
I want to talk about, when we're on the subject of the phone, want to talk about one of the things that is sort of the classic dilemma of our age right now. It's that you're out to dinner, you're engaging with another person face to face, but that person is on their phone a lot. They're checking their texts. Maybe something comes up in conversation and they want to back check it on their phone and make sure it's right. And before you know it, you know, it's them having an intimate night out with their phone and you're witnessing it. What do you do about that?
It's just terribly rude. Now, I understand if there's a conversation and someone says, well, why don't you look that up? That's different than what people do. And what people do, where they're on their phones the whole time, this is effectively like bringing a legal pad and doing your office work while somebody else is sitting there waiting for you. It's really, really hurtful. The other person is just left to sort of look into their napkin as if they're searching for secret messages. They feel as if everyone's watching them. And again, it brings up the empathy thing. I mean, that's a really awful thing to do to another person. And I'm big on people not allowing themselves to be victimized. Now, if you give that person sort of an angry lecture or hurt lecture, then you're still acting victim-y. And so what I like to do in a situation like that, my friends don't do that to me, I think they know better, but even if they're that rude, but is to say, well, you know, I'll be outside. When you finish your call, you come get me. Because that makes the point without being all hurt and woundy about it. And that person, I think, will be more likely to see that they're being a jerk.
Now, you're a big advocate of speaking out when you experience rudeness. You think this is, it's part of your shaming thing that you think will bring us all to heal a little better. But sometimes it backfires. Can you tell us a story about the time you saw a guy, you thought he was doing something unsavory on your fence, and it turns out, I don't know, maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. But what happened?
Oh, I think you're talking about, well, there was a guy who was, and people treat the great outdoors like it's a great big bathroom where I live, and that's really not right. It makes it smell like a men's bathroom when it rains. But actually, maybe you're talking about the girl in the Volkswagen. There was a girl, we're real close to the street right here. She had opened her car window and was having a loud argument on her cell phone, on her speakerphone in her car. And this is like being in an auditorium and broadcasting to the entire block. And I normally know better. I try not to behave in a counterproductive, hot-headed way, but I was already annoyed about something. And I just came out on my porch and I said, "We can hear you indoors," or something like that. And this girl, instead of doing what she does when I do the right thing, which is matter-of-factly letting someone know, excuse me, hey, you know, you probably didn't know, but we're real close to the property line here. That tends to make people want to be polite. But my sort of angry reaction to her made her come up to my gate, yell for about 5 minutes straight, and then vandalize my mailbox.
So that didn't go down the way you wanted.
No. But I use this. I say in the book, I do not have perfect manners. In fact, I have substandard manners like everybody. That's being human. But what I try to do is look at things like that and use it as a learning experience for how I'm not going to behave again. And I have done that pretty much. Not done that where you just launch off at somebody and where you instead use that matter of fact, basically acting like you believe somebody has good manners and maybe they just didn't remember or didn't notice. And then you let them decide to behave well.
We're talking right now to columnist Amy Alkin about her new book. It's called Good Manners for Nice People. And we're taking your calls next. Have you ever dealt with rude people in your life? I'm sure you have. How do you deal with them when you come across them? Do you believe in confronting them and saying something? And what is your technique for doing so? How does it pan out for you? And what kind of manners do you think should be universal? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send us an email to talk@wpr.org. We're continuing our conversation now with columnist Amy Alkin about her new book, Good Manners for Nice People. We're taking your calls now. How do you deal with rude people in your life? Do you think people are ruder now than ever? Or maybe it's just a matter of degree. What is your code of manners? Do you confront people when you come across it, or do you just walk away and feel bitter? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or send us an email to talk@wpr.org. And we'll go to our phone lines now. We have Paula with us from Oshkosh. Hi, Paula.
Oh, hi. How exciting. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two comments, actually, and I'll try to be brief. The one, I was out to lunch with a couple of very dear friends, one of whom we share the same birthday. It was a birthday luncheon, and both of them had their phones out, and they were texting and texting and texting. And I was frustrated. We don't live in the same city, and we don't get together very often. And finally, I said, put your expletive phones away. I mean, it wasn't a terrible expletive, but I know that wasn't the right thing to say, but I was absolutely appalled. We're all really good friends, and like I said, we don't get together very often. And I thought your columnist comment was so funny about, oh, look at this interesting napkin, because I was kind of doing that. I was fidgeting. And my other comment is, whenever I visit any place, a retail store, a clothing store, a fast food store, and I'm giving them my hard-earned money, they don't say thank you. I don't know how we've lost that. I end up saying thank you 2, 3, 4 times, and I never get a thank you. It's no problem or have a good day. And I'm just curious what your columnist thinks about that.
Great, Paula. Thank you. A couple of good stories there from Paula. What do you think about those two incidences?
Oh, boy, do I sympathize with her. And this is our impulse. Our impulse is to lecture people in the moment. And believe me, it is my impulse too. But what's really important is to not act in counterproductive ways. And scolding people in the moment tends not to work. First of all, because you're shaming them. And secondly, because there are two of them doing this. This is a sort of form of reverse peer pressure. It allows people more leeway when they see that they aren't the only one. A more effective thing to do is to wait until afterward, or to take one person aside and to email someone and say, you know, just in a not a very accusatory way, criticizing people does not make them change. It makes them want to clobber you, to let them know that you felt badly, because sympathy really works as a motivator. It's very effective.
But then you have to sit through the whole lunch while they're on their phones.
Well, it's a problem when there's a group. If you're in a group, I would talk to the other person there, you know, or either that. It really is just this thing of yelling at people. She didn't say what happened, but it tends to make for bad feelings in the moment. And so it tends to be ineffective. The people, they aren't going to become better people because you do this. And they probably actually will want to fight back and say, oh, but it's not a big deal. That's the problem. You make them defensive instead of making them change.
And what about the thank you at stores?
Oh, this is a generational thing with a no problem. People who are basically, I think, over 55 or 50, 55, 60, it makes them almost homicidal when someone says thank you and they say, when they say thank you and the person says no problem. But I think they're a little picky about that, because the person isn't indicating that it would be a problem. This is just a way of speaking. And so that's something that people are too picky. But really, the thing where people aren't saying thank you, that's pretty awful. It's a convention, a nice convention. We look for that. It's sort of a dignity violation when you say thank you and the person says nothing.
Right. It's a bit of closure.
Yeah. And you can repeat the thank you, but in a nice way. See, once you get sort of nasty about it, then the person, again, it makes them want to fight back. And you can, the thing that may work, I haven't tried this, but is to say thank you like they just forgot to say you're welcome, in a cheerful tone.
All right. Well, Paula, thank you. And I hope we gave you some advice there for the thank yous. And we're going to go next to Rose in Bayside. Hi, Rose.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a son who has autism, and over the years, we've suffered comments and stares and advice. And one of the things that has worked for me is to just say, you know, we're trying our best. Thank you so much for your input. And I think that serves to both shame and educate people. So that's just something that's worked for me.
Okay, well, that's a great approach. What do you think, Amy?
Oh, I think that's great. It's really great because she's not scolding people. And her approach is tends to bring up sympathy in people. I have a little friend who has autism, and his mother will, if she takes him, for example, to a school event, and she's very careful to not take him places where he is going to bother people terribly. They eat out at loud restaurants, for example. But she'll say to people, my son has autism, to people around her, and, you know, I hope that there won't be any outbursts. We're working very hard on this. And if there is, you know, please bear with us, and we're going to go outside. And so this lets people know ahead of time that you aren't just a parent with entitled children, but that you're working on this, and it's something that's real challenging for both parent and child.
So that sounds like something that acknowledges something. You treat someone else as a person worthy of your time and respect by acknowledging you might be inconveniencing them and then asking them to be patient with you.
Right, because people like that. If we all have moments when we're sort of loud or we bother people, and if you seem like you care about that, that you don't just think, oh, deal with it, this really makes people much more likely to go along with you rather than think you're just a jerk.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story, Rose. And we go next to Andrea in Kaukauna. Hi, Andrea.
Hi. I'm calling to discuss a rude episode I had last night as a soccer coach. The opposing team, I had no subs on our team, so all my kids were on the field. And the three players that were subs for the opposing team were near me, close enough that I could hear them start to yell at my players. We were winning at this point. Treat them like dirt. Kick them. They're terrible. And just yelling mean things to my players. My kids are looking, the refs were looking out, you know, looking at these kids. Their coach never did anything. So after a couple minutes, I finally had it. And I tried to politely say, girls, I've heard enough. You need to knock it off. And that's as mean as I said it. And the coach turned to me, and he clearly could hear me say that, which I didn't even yell at. What did you just say to my players? And I said, I told them to knock it off. They are yelling horrible, mean things out at the field. And the ref immediately heard the discussion. And I'm a small female, and he's this big guy. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. And long story short, the ref came over. He's like, I've been listening to your players. It's completely all uncalled for. In our league, if you show anything unsportsmanlike, you're supposed to get a red card. By the way, these are U-12 girls soccer players. This is not it's a rec league. It's not competitive. I mean, technically it's competitive, but it's not it's a recreational league.
Okay, so ultimately the ref sided with you on that.
Oh, completely. And then the coach acted like he never heard what they said. I don't know if then he feared that he would get in trouble. So later he did, while game was still playing, you know, came up to me. He did apologize then. And said, I'm sorry, I guess I didn't really hear what they were saying. But it was, I will say, it was very insincere. And then those three girls, every time they subbed back out, then I could hear them, and they were very loud and were saying, well, what can we do? And then they insisted on coming as close to me as possible and in a very mean voice yelling, go yellow team. And I was polite. I did nothing.
So you were getting some back talk there on that. What about that situation? Sports can be tough. There's a tradition of talking smack, but it sounds like, you know, it's crossing the line. This is supposed to be a game of sportsmanship at this age.
Yeah, it sure is. And Andrea behaves so well because it is so easy to go off on people in this situation. And for as dismaying as it is, the behavior of the coach and these three girls, you should really feel good about staying classy and that these people are not accountable. This is not surprising. There's something that we, a human bias called confirmation bias. You know, we like to look at things only that confirm that we're right and not look at things that disconfirm that. And this coach didn't want to believe that he or his team had done anything wrong, but they absolutely were wrong. And he knew that despite his insincere apology. And I love that he was forced into that and that the ref, through your sort of classy and firm persistence, came over and finally did something.
Well, thank you so much for that call, Andrea. And Amy, thanks to you for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
We've been speaking to Amy Elkin, writer of The Advice Goddess, a science-based syndicated column that runs in about 100 newspapers across North America. She's also the author of the new book called Good Manners for Nice People.